Harper Audio presents Life is a Gift, The Zen of Bennett by Tony Bennett. Read for you by Joe Mantegna. Chapter 1. Only Sing Good Songs. I grew up in an era when there was no such thing as planned obsolescence. Instead, everything was made with quality. Like so many people my age who came out of the Great Depression, I grew up with a strong sense of appreciation for what little we had. My grandfather owned a grocery store, and my mom was a seamstress working under sweatshop conditions. But despite the harsh circumstances, they always took time to make the children in the family feel special. I never took for granted the importance of the love of my family and friends to pull me through hard times. They taught me humility and instilled in me a work ethic that remains to this day. I was drilled not to be the best, but to always strive to do my best, and that if I did, the rewards would follow. I was told that everything I do should be done with care. Even now, I feel strongly that if you buy a suit or a dress, it should be well made, and it should last for years, instead of a con job where you buy something only to have to replace it after it falls apart 6 months later. You can go broke that way. It makes better sense to save up your money to buy one well-made suit than 10 cheap suits. There should be a law against planned obsolescence, and everyone should follow this lead. In other words, an artist or a company or an individual should not put out a work of art or a song or any product that he knows won't endure. When I was 10, my father passed away. After he died, my mother had to support the three of us kids all by herself. She did what they called piecework, earning a penny per dress, sewing all day long in the factory. She'd bring work home with her every night. Once or twice in an evening, she'd come across a bad dress, one of such poor quality that she'd refuse to work on it. We were desperate for money, but she couldn't bring herself to do something she felt was beneath her. "I only do quality dresses," she would say. "I'm not going to work on a bad one." Many years later, I realized that this was the attitude I held toward my job, too. She became my inspiration for insisting on singing only quality songs. Years later, another experience that reinforced this idea was my training at the American Theater Wing on 44th Street, which I attended after returning home from Germany after my service in World War II. The government had set up the GI Bill so that soldiers could receive an education. The bill paid for tuition for either trade school or college and gave a lot of fellows like myself the chance to keep going with the education that the war had interrupted and to attend a school we couldn't have afforded without it. People like Marlon Brando, Harry Belafonte, Paul Newman, Shelley Winters, and Sidney Poitier took classes there. The theater wing was a fantastic school, and my teacher had trained with Stanislavski, who founded method acting. I've applied the techniques I learned in that school to my singing ever since. I think of the lyrics in an autobiographical way, as if they were written about something I've lived through. Not every song allows for this, only the well-crafted ones do. So I make it a point to seek out quality songs that provide that kind of powerful emotion, and as a result, the public can experience them the way that I do. As they listen to me sing, they get an honest sense of how I'm feeling while I perform. This connection between singer and audience would be impossible if I added a cheap song to my repertoire, which is why I never have. The theater wing not only taught me the importance of doing quality work, my teachers there also told me not to listen to anyone who tried to tell us otherwise. I never really appreciated how valuable that attitude was until the producer Mitch Miller signed me to my first recording contract in 1950. Mitch was the head of A&R, Artist and Repertoire, at Columbia, and his job was to sign new talent for the label. He was a great classical oboist who saw how much money novelty music was making, and he became the first producer to make a fortune doing commercial songs for the masses. From the moment they signed me, everyone at the company tried to change the way I sang. They couldn't get over the fact that I loved jazz. Jazz wouldn't sell as well as pop, and they wanted to try to stop me from singing what I wanted to. All they thought about was how many albums they could sell to the public. When the record companies saw how much money they could make doing pop tunes, they started telling their artists what to do. They always thought they knew best, and they refused to trust the artists' own instincts. In the early years of the music business, things were different. Producers would just say, "Record a song for us," and the singer did what came naturally. But the times were changing.